it's the 19th of January, and we're so glad that you could be with us today. We're going to be talking about a ride in a canoe down a river. And today I have with me in our studio...
Anna.
And you're actually from this area, aren't you, Anna?
Right. I'm actually from the state of Illinois, but I went to university in the Milwaukee area. So I'm very excited about this article today.
And we also have...
Simon. And I just want to say that I think this is a great article to have in January, because in January we're often thinking about things like New Year's resolutions and goals for a year, and people often take January to think about what they're doing with their lives. And this article is really about fulfilling a dream.
It is, and so we can add that aspect into our article today. This is our lifestyle article, and my name is Linda, and I'll be your host today, and we're so glad that you could join us. And if you have your magazine with you, you can open it to page 30, and or you could turn to whatever digital device that you're using so that you can follow along. So let's get started right away by doing the reading, and we will read the first column on the left side.
The Ride of a Lifetime. For his 99th birthday, this nonagenarian wanted a canoe ride on the Milwaukee River. Richard Franz of Milwaukee prefers to guard his full identity, but not his age or his zest for life. When he turned 99, he made a simple birthday request: to canoe the Milwaukee River. Franz is more familiar than most with the river. He grew up in Milwaukee and, as a boy, played along the river's shore. As an adult, he worked from an office overlooking the river. These days, Franz is a supporter of the Urban Ecology Center, UEC, headquartered in Riverside Park. The center and its branches run a host of outdoor and environmental programs, including on the Milwaukee River.
So we're going to be talking about a nonagenarian. This is not a word you hear every day, is it, Anna?
No, it's not. A nonagenarian is someone who is in their 90s.
Okay. Do you know any nonagenarians, Simon?
I don't think I do, but I actually had a question. If a nonagenarian is in their 90s, what is someone who's in their 80s?
I don't know. Oh, you could look that up for our next program.
Or in their hundreds, even, I wonder.
Yeah. I think in their hundreds, they're called centenarians, right?
Right, centenarians. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very interesting. I also think it's interesting the title we have on today's article, because it kind of has a double meaning. That idea, the ride of a lifetime, here, of course, we're talking literally about a ride in a canoe, but this is kind of a phrase that I think kind of comes from American car culture, because it also often is used to describe an experience, even if it's not an actual ride.
That's right. You hear it now and then when people are talking about, you're right, some kind of fun experience that they've had, or something maybe that's kind of challenging and exhilarating with a little fear involved.
Yeah, they'll say like, what a ride, or that was a great ride.
But there's no ride involved at all.
No,
it all has to do
ride.
With the experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that's kind of interesting. I also think it's pretty special that this gentleman is as active as he is on his 99th birthday. I hope I am that active when I am 99. Yeah.
You planning to be 99?
It's always good to plan ahead, right?
So. That's right. It is. Well, we see here that Richard Franz is his name, and he's from Milwaukee. And he prefers to guard his full identity. None of us really quite know why, but if you're guarding your identity, it means you just don't want to let everybody know everything about you, right? So that they can track you down.
Well, it's interesting. When we guard our identity, usually we only give one of our names. Like, we wouldn't give our family name. We'd just give our first name. But it seems here he's actually given two names. So I wonder if he actually has more names in his real legal name.
Yeah, good point.
That's possible.
Yeah.
But I don't. That's not really that important to our article. We see that he is guarding that part of his identity, but he's not guarding his age or his zest for life. So we found out that he's 99, and he has a zest for life.
Right. Many people are often ashamed to talk about their age, or they don't like to discuss it with other people, but he's very open about his age and maybe even proud of the fact that he's turning 99.
I think anybody who turns 99 should be very proud of that.
That's right.
Yeah, we have this interesting term there, too, zest for life.
Mm-hmm.
Zest here means enthusiasm and energy, but people who are fans of The Kitchen might know zest by a different meaning.
And?
Yeah, I'm not a real fan of The Kitchen, so I'm not going to be able to tell you about that, but I was hoping one of you two would. It's got something to do with oranges or lemons, right?
Well, yes. Okay, if you add zest to something, it means that you finally grate the peel to add the peel of the orange or the lemon or even grapefruit to add to cookies or something that you're making to make the taste a little bit stronger.
Yeah, so the interesting thing about zest from The Kitchen, I suppose, is that it makes the food more exciting, right? And so it's a similar kind of meaning, I guess, in that way.
Right. If you have zest for life, you know, you also want to add some spice to it. We could say that, right?
Yeah, I guess
you want to add some spice to your life.
So this man, Richard France, he likes to enhance his life with maybe different activities. We often say that variety is the spice of life. So I think it's interesting for his birthday, 99th birthday, of all the requests that he could make, he really wants to canoe down the Milwaukee River. I think that's very special.
Yeah, and it might be an unfamiliar experience for many of our listeners today. In North America, canoeing down rivers, kayaking on rivers is a pretty common recreational pastime. It's something that kids do when they're growing up. People do as adults, too.
Well, let's look at the area of the country that we're talking about. We're talking about Milwaukee, and that is in the state of Wisconsin. And if you look at your map here, you'll see that it's near Lake Michigan. And it's between the states of Minnesota and Illinois, and that is in the upper Midwest. So Minnesota borders Canada, so you know how far north this is. And canoeing is quite popular, as Simon said earlier.
Right. This Milwaukee area is very famous for their products of cheese and also beer. So they have a lot of breweries in Milwaukee and a lot of cheese products that tourists like to come and enjoy.
Okay. And also this area, I think Wisconsin and certainly Minnesota is full of lakes. So canoeing and kayaking, as Simon said earlier, is a very popular activity. And here they're doing river canoeing or kayaking. And also there's a lot of lake canoeing and kayaking in these states. Very, very popular spring, summer, and fall activity. So we see that France is very familiar with this river, more familiar than a lot of people. Why is that, Simon?
Well, it tells us here he grew up in Milwaukee, and so as a boy, he played along the river's shore. And that's an experience that's actually quite similar to my own upbringing. I grew up in Canada, obviously, along a river called the Mighty Saugeen River.
Ooh.
It's not actually called the Mighty Saugeen. It's just the Saugeen River. And it's not really that mighty, but it was a great place to play growing up. And we did a lot of stuff like canoeing and kayaking and rafting and swimming. I think that he basically had a very similar experience growing up.
What about you, Anna? Did you play along a river shore growing up?
Not very much. We didn't have any rivers by my house. I did grow up about 30 minutes from Lake Michigan, though.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of summers we spent camping by the lake shore. And that lake is absolutely beautiful, so big you can't see the other side for most of it. So I've had more of that experience, but not so much rivers.
I grew up fishing along the Mississippi River. My mom and her sisters loved to go fishing, and so I spent a lot of time fishing with them along the river and catching fish too. So we would, my friends and I would like explore along the river instead of sitting there all day.
Mm.
And then as an adult, he also worked at an office that overlooked the river, which is probably fairly easy to do from Milwaukee, right? It's situated right on this river.
Exactly, both sides.
So his office must have had a very nice view, because it's not just the river we're looking at, it's also the trees on both sides. You know, wherever rivers are, you can tell by the greenery that's growing up alongside of it.
Yeah, that's right.
And then we see that now, okay, that was as a boy, and now as an adult, he worked. Obviously, he's retired, and now he supports the Urban Ecology Center, which is headquartered in Riverside Park, which is located in Milwaukee. This is a very interesting organization, isn't it?
It is. The Urban Ecology Center has several different locations in the Milwaukee area. They do things like environmental education, community programs, and if you're a member of the UEC, you actually get free kayak and canoe rentals.
And also, this organization is a bridge between the academic world and between the community. They do a lot of classes for people and also for local schools. They give school children hands-on science and nature experiences, and they teach them how to live sustainably, which means that you live off the land so it can reproduce itself. And they also, you can rent outdoor recreation equipment from them, as you were talking about, and they also do a lot of study of endangered, like, snakes. They find where snakes hibernate in the winter so that they can protect them. And migratory birds, they study migratory birds. There was a whole list of kind of animals and plants that they are really studying out of this organization, like frogs, all kinds of things that, like, bugs that live along the river are in that area, and they're studying the ecosystem and how they sustain the ecosystem through this kind of life.
Yeah, I was going to say these kinds of organizations, they tend to be fairly common in North America. As with both Richard Franz and myself, a lot of North Americans have sort of this shared experience of using rivers and using wetlands and lakes and things like that. But unfortunately, over the last couple of decades, the water quality in those sorts of things has seemed to really go downhill. It's gotten a lot worse, a lot more pollution, things like that. I remember being able to drink from streams when I was a kid. Now you wouldn't want to do that in most of these. And I think that big environmental change has caused a lot of concern with people. So there's a lot of interest in these kinds of organizations that manage river areas, and they do things like clean up parks and clean up the rivers and make sure there's trees planted along the river so that you don't have soil kind of eroding into the water and things like that. So they do a really wide range of things, just trying to take care of and restore these beautiful natural areas that are flowing through cities.
Right, and they have a lot of educational resources too to get people involved, so that, you know, the interest of the community is what's going to sustain that.
Yeah, that's right. And the interesting thing is they often tend to be mostly volunteer driven. Like, you can sometimes get sort of summer jobs with them, or they might have a very small management staff, but most of the people involved in their projects tend to be volunteers.
Well, you did a lot of study of rivers in the past, haven't you, Simon?
I did. Yeah, I actually did my senior thesis on rivers and fish in rivers when I was in university. So I spent a lot of time measuring water quality in different river areas and checking out and cataloging fish species that were in the river, things like that. Yeah.
And Anna, you actually have gone kayaking on this river, right?
That's right. For a university class, we went kayaking down this river, and it was a beautiful experience downtown Milwaukee. But I've also been rafting with my friends more upriver. It's a little shallower, but more rural, more rustic, and absolutely beautiful.
Okay. So what can you tell us about the scenery along this river?
Well, downtown, there is a historic section called the Third Ward, and you can see a lot of old bridges, a lot of old railroad tracks, the facades on the buildings, a lot of church steeples. There are also downtown restaurants and pubs where you can dock your boat and go out for a hamburger or a drink. Upriver, it's more rustic. It's a lot of cliffs by the river, a lot of trees. And my favorite time of year in this area is autumn, because the colors in that northern woods is just absolutely breathtaking. It's very beautiful up there.
Right. You know, the trees in that area of the world, you know, turn yellow, red. I mean, they're beautiful in the fall. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people go. Actually, they go to Wisconsin and northern Minnesota, well, not northern Minnesota, probably the middle of Minnesota to look at the trees turning colors.
But you don't want to go too late in the season, because it does get cold up there.
Right. I think in the Midwest right now, I mean, well, it's already January, but in this past fall, it's all the leaves were changing in October. And by the end of October, most of the leaves were actually gone. And was getting down into the 40s Fahrenheit, so mm-hmm. that's a little chilly to be canoeing on a river with the winds.
Right. So I'm curious, what time of year Richard Friends was canoeing?
Well,
when his birthday is.
It looks like in the picture, on page 30, the guy is wearing a short sleeve shirt that's actually doing the canoeing. So it has to be either in late summer, early fall, or in the spring.
It might be because he's doing all the work, though.
Richard
there looks like he's bundled up pretty warmly, so.
Right. Well, I'm sure that's because of the breeze off the river. Okay, well, let's continue with our article now, and we will finish reading page 30 and on into page 31.
Fulfilling a dream. When Ken Lineback, UEC executive director, learned of Franz's birthday wish, he set about making it happen. Lineback knows I have a fondness for canoeing and the Milwaukee River. He contacted me and asked if I'd like to assist with the trip and join him and Franz in a canoe. We arranged to meet on a Monday morning at the Milwaukee Rowing Club. The day dawned cool and clear with a brisk north breeze to provide a tailwind. Our one canoe excursion sprouted into a flotilla. Lineback is a master of the collaborative process and leveraging the power of we. He encouraged other older active adults to join. The group grew to include 5 canoes and 3 other nonagenarians. George, 96, and Pat Mueller, 91, and Betty O'Sullivan, 95. When Ken learned we had family in from out of town, he said, "Bring them all," Pat Mueller said. The cast included George and Pat's daughter, Anne Rose, and son-in-law, Bill Rose, Betty's son, Jerry, and grandson, Eric, and UEC staff members Cassie Mordini, Jessica St. John, and Mike Ziegler. Daniel Gray, a former UEC employee, and Kurt Chandler, a Milwaukee journalist, completed the on-the-water crew. The ages ranged from 26 to 99.
So we're seeing the fulfillment of a dream here. Have you had any dreams that have been fulfilled? Are you still dreaming?
You kind of got us on the spot there, Linda. It's hard to come up with a dream like that just on the spur of the moment. I think most people have had a lot of different dreams fulfilled, especially people seem to have a lot of dreams about travel. I know I've had dreams of going to see different kinds of places, and when you get there and you see it, it's a wonderful experience. You feel really happy.
I think that this is, we also have to consider his age here. You know, at 99, we don't really think about people going out and having water, doing water activities, right? And I think I've had some, well, actually now that I look back, I have thought, I didn't really realize how much travel I would be doing in my life, but it certainly has been very interesting and fulfilling in a lot of different ways, to come in contact with a lot of different cultures. And to do that, you really have to have an open mind.
Yeah, people have all kinds of different dreams, though. I mean, their dreams are based around like experiences. Maybe they want to go skydiving, and jump out of an airplane or become scuba divers and check out the Great Barrier Reef. I guess that's travel and experience together. There's all kinds of different things like that. But I think as you grow older, your dreams kind of change.
That's true. But I think for him, for Richard Franz, he's kind of an inspiration. Because age, I mean, it's kind of interesting. At 99, he just has one simple birthday request. And we say that this is a fulfillment of a dream that he had. So, we kind of think of people maybe as they age that they don't really, they've experienced so much what's left. But that's not really necessarily true. I mean, if we think about Doris herself, she learned to scuba dive in when she was like 56. I mean, a lot of people would think, oh, I'm too old to do that. But, I think it also has to do with your attitude toward life and what you want to get out of life as well.
Definitely. And I wonder if this has been a lifelong dream or if, like Simon mentioned, if this is something that has kind of come in his older age.
Well, I'm assuming that when he was younger, he probably spent a lot of time on this river because he certainly played beside it. So he has had a lot of opportunity in the past to do this, but it seems like maybe it's something he wants to do this year. It just reminds me of the former president, George Bush, you know, went skydiving on his 80th birthday. That was one of his dreams. Mm. So, you know, it just depends. I think we need to expand our worldview. I'm speaking as the older person on the panel here. You know, you can't, age is just a state of mind. So, you know, we need to expand our horizons a little bit. But we see that Ken Leinbach, he was the executive director of the Urban Ecology Center. He heard of Franz's birthday wish, so he set about making it happen. And we look at set about here, it means he began to do something about it or to deal with it to make it possible.
That's right. He sounds like a very assertive person. I suppose mm-hmm. you have to be an executive director. But he has a lot of contacts, and he just goes through and invites a lot more people. A lot of times it's fun to have an experience by yourself, but getting other people involved can really improve the experience because it's a lot more fun with other people.
But let's take a look at this words, what this phrase here said about. Notice that it's a phrasal verb, and we use it in a lot of different ways, don't we, Simon?
Yeah, that's right. We basically, it means you prepare or start doing something. And so when you set about something, you've really, another phrase, you've got the ball rolling on it. So you might say, I'm going to set about doing my homework a little later today. Or you might say, I've already set about cleaning the house, but I'm not finished yet.
Yeah, we're never finished.
Yeah.
I do need to set about doing that. Okay, and you're right. He said that Leinbach knew that actually it's the writer of the article, Paul Smith of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, had a fondness for canoeing and the Milwaukee River. So he contacted him and asked him to help with the trip and to join him and France in a canoe. So that's really how this article got written, I assume.
And the article goes on to explain what the trip was like, what kind of trip they went on. It says they arranged to meet on a Monday morning, which, of course, is always a good time to use public facilities and public parks because there's a lot less people. It's a lot less crowded. And so if you're organizing a big group event, it's great to do it during the week when there aren't as many people there. They happened to meet at the Milwaukee Rowing Club. A rowing club tends to be a private group of people who really like rowing, but often not just rowing sort of rowboats when we think, you know, row, row, row your boat. Not that kind of thing. Really, we're talking here instead about things like kayaks and canoes and also rowing in the racing rowing sense, usually. The point being, a rowing club, they'll have a facility right down by the river where people can get into boats and use different boats. And so it's a great place to start a trip like this.
Right. And we see that the day dawned cool and clear. So that notice that usually we say dawn and dusk as nouns, right? But we can also use dawn as a verb. So it means at the very beginning of the day, it started out as a cool, clear day with a brisk north breeze. Now, for those of us who live in the tropics, this probably doesn't have a lot of meaning. But for those of us who have lived in the north or in the Midwest, the upper Midwest, this has a lot of meaning. A brisk north breeze, Anna.
Oh, that's so true. The brisk north breeze in Wisconsin can be very chilly, and that's why I'm wondering what time of year it is.
And we see that it provided a tailwind, which is one good thing that you need when you're canoeing, isn't it? What is a tailwind?
Well, a tailwind is a wind that's blowing from behind you, so it makes it easier to travel. Instead of moving into the wind, which makes it harder to move, it's helping you along. I thought it was interesting they used the word brisk there, too, because the two of you were mentioning these cold north winds, and that's actually what brisk means. We haven't taught the word here, but brisk basically means chilly. Or a cold, fresh north breeze. And so it's blowing from behind them to help them get down the river without doing too much work.
That's right. But the thing about a tailwind is that on the way back, it can be more difficult because you're fighting against the wind, right?
Right. And we also use this with airplanes. For example, if you're flying like across to the United States or to North America or back, oftentimes if there is a strong tailwind, it will cut down your flying time by maybe a half hour. Sometimes it's even cut it by an hour because the tailwind is so strong. And then they see that their one canoe excursion sprouted into a flotilla. This is such a great sentence. So they started out with one canoe, but it sprouted. And to sprout means it begins to grow or exist very suddenly, right? And a flotilla is what?
Well, it's a group of boats that sort of are all sailing together. Often it's particularly used with ships, especially big military ships. It tends to be a military term.
Right, and we see that Leinbach is a master of the collaborative process and leveraging the power of we, which means, as Anna said before, it's more fun to do things together. So he had a lot of contacts. He got a lot of people together. And he encouraged, there were a lot of several other older active adults to join. In fact, they had three nonagenarians on this group and their families, which made it sprout into five canoes. So it's kind of interesting. In the very end, the last paragraph like talks about all of the relationships with the people. The other nonagenarians are George. They're, you know, 96, 91, and 95, and a 99-year-old. And then several of their family members joined them. And in the very end, they had ages ranging from what, Anna?
From 26 to 99. So they definitely had a large age difference in their group.
Yeah, which is great, you know, because you have a lot of different experiences that you can share, and it's nice to do it together. Well, we're going to continue tomorrow with our article of The Ride of a Lifetime, so we'll hope you join us again. Bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye.